Ian, we are, I just asked the Finance Committee to approve the minutes from the December 10th meeting, and I'm hearing that those minutes have been approved. Gentlemen?
Okay.
Correct? Okay, then the first order of business this evening will be the auditor's presentation of the comprehensive annual financial report. And this evening we have Nick Cavalier with our auditing firm. So, Nick, I'll allow you to move forward.
Thank you. So there's two documents that everyone should have received. Oh, that's my copy. Sorry.
Oh, is your copy?
Yeah. One is the financial statements, which is the thicker of the two documents. I don't know if you guys have this electronically, or I could just speak off of it. And then the other is our management our report to management and the governing body regarding any risks and other required communications. Page one of the report is the auditor's opinion, which for this year was an unqualified opinion, and that is the highest level of assurance that financial statements are free of misstatements but present fairly the respective position of the district for the year ended 2012. So that's a very good thing. That's the same audit report that you received last year. What I'm going to do is just kind of briefly go over the income statements, which is on page, I believe, 16 and 17 of the financial statements. And collectively, we see that the district's fund balances ended at about $16.1 million when compared to, $18.9 million when compared to last year of about $16.1. That's about an increase of $2.8 million across all the funds, of course. This isn't just any one fund. But what's interesting to note is that we did actually see this transfer from the general fund and the operations and maintenance fund of about $2.7 million into the debt service fund as a result of the levy that was abated for the 2010 levy, which is effective in fiscal year, the 2011 levy, which is going to be effective in fiscal year 13. That $2.7 million that was transferred is actually equal to your debt service payments for principal and interest for fiscal year 13. I guess collectively the fund balances for the district are healthy. They continue to be healthy. This abatement of this tax levy for the debt service is kind of confusing in the sense when you look at 2012, you think, well, shouldn't this be more, I guess, representative on the income statement for this year? And the reason why it's ultimately deferred a little bit longer is because of the way that the district recognizes the property tax levy. For fiscal year 2012, you're actually recognizing the levy that was adopted in 2010. So the 2011 levy is the one that you abated the debt service extension. That won't be recognized until 2013. For the most part, you know, it was a very good audit. I think that everyone is very well prepared. Our questions are always answered very promptly. We were able to issue our report in October, which is actually a little bit sooner than we did last fiscal year. Everyone's very prepared. A very good audit. If there's any questions about the financial statements, I'd be more than happy to take them. There's a lot of numbers in here. I didn't want to go over all of them, but just a brief highlight.
Bob, this is what we got at the November 26th meeting?
That's correct.
I think, yeah, we went over it before.
Okay, you guys have kind of went over through this in detail. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I kind of got that feeling. I didn't see too many reports. So, the latter part of my presentation is really regarding any risks that are identified by the audit team when we're here in the field. Auditing standards require that we kind of gain an understanding of your processes and your procedures, and the reason for that is so that we can plan our audit accordingly and make sure that we address all material risks. And I'm pleased to say that our report to the board has not changed any more than what we presented from last fiscal year. We've continued to identify a material weakness over financial reporting. This risk has been communicated as far back as 2008 when the auditing standards changed. And the rationale behind it is that the district utilizes the services of the external auditing firm to assist in preparing the accrual adjustments from taking the cash basis records to the modified accrual basis of accounting, in addition to preparing some additional statements, the statement of net assets and the statement of activities. So these are called conversion entries that we prepare. So as we are external to the district, we can't be part of your internal control over financial reporting. So we identify this as a risk. Most school districts that we audit throughout the state don't maintain somebody on hand to just do this one function, prepare an annual report once a year. So this isn't necessarily something that I think that the state is looking at as being, you know, a concern where they want you to address this quickly. We haven't seen any adverse reactions from the rating companies either, Standards & Poor and Moody, when you're going out for bond ratings. So outside of that, we didn't identify any other control issues that we thought we needed to bring attention to the governing body or management for that matter. Outside of that, I really don't have too much more to add. There's some other information in the back of this report that talks about some upcoming GASBs and then some changes to the standards that are pretty good informational items, I think, to just kind of glance over if you have a few minutes. Outside of that, I don't have anything else to add. Doesn't look like there's any surprises. I think everybody pretty much looked through this. And, okay.
Thank you very much, Nick.
Perfect.
Thank you, Nick.
Any guesses on CPI on Wednesday?
2.1. That's what it was trending.
I'm saying one.
You're saying one?
I'm saying one.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Nick.
Thank you.
The next order of business then this evening will be the continuation of the pre-K at-risk program, and Karen Carlson will be making a presentation.
So just as a quick reminder, our pre-K at-risk program serves students ages 3 to 5 within our district who are at risk for academic failure, and a couple of those key indicators would be economically disadvantaged and often ESL students as well. And so currently we have two sections of early childhood, which is a required program. Those are students who have an IEP, special education students. We have one Spanish bilingual pre-K class here at Churchill. We have one ESL class here at Churchill. They're all ESL students, so that would be 20 in each of those programs. And then we have the four blended sections over at Forest Lawn. And those would have 10 pre-K at-risk kids, 6 early childhood special ed, and then 4 tuition students, students as well. So, as you saw in the report, we've had the program since 2001, and up until that 2011-2012 school year, it was an entitlement grant. It was open to any district who met the criteria, but then it went from an entitlement grant to competitive, and at that point is when the district lost its funding for that program. And so that was for the past two academic school years, one of the this school year as well. Bob pulled the financial information, and it's embedded there in the report. And but when you pull out the dollars for tuition, you'll see that the program's approximately costing us $335,000, a little bit more than that. We actually doubled the number of our tuition students, and we still have a couple of those spots open since we moved to the blended in that, and so that helps offset the cost of the program as well. We know the impact of early intervention and the benefits it provides to these kids. We also know the increased demands of the Common Core put our kids even at greater risk of academic failure without this opportunity. And then it would also, we believe, would place an additional burden on our kindergarten teachers, half-day program, trying to meet the needs of our most at-risk learners without this early intervention. We know the district was able to successfully budget for the program this past year, and we believe we can continue to support it. So at this time, this is really just for informational purposes. It'll come back to the board at our next meeting around that. Any questions?
I'm just trying to remember the net cost that we had discussed last year.
We thought the program was costing us about $400,000 annually, but upon further review, that's what we determined the cost to be this year, a net of about $335,000. Any other questions?
This program, as I recall, we were going to look at it last year to see if the funding was going to come back. I'm assuming what you're recommending is that regardless of funding, you want to continue with this.
Yes. I would say we don't expect a renewed opportunity to even apply for the competitive grant because they wouldn't allow us, and Julie, correct me if I'm wrong, we couldn't even apply this academic school year. So unless something were to change where then we would be eligible to apply for the competitive grant, we would continue to, we're asking that we want to continue to fund it.
Any other questions? Hearing none. Thank you, Karen. The next
one. I have a question. Sorry, Bob. I have a question.
Sure.
Just for the board members. we would anticipate bringing this forward just as a recommendation to continue providing this program for next year. Are there any concerns that you might anticipate or any things that we should be making sure we answer as we bring this forward to the full board?
I'm not seeing any, I'm not hearing any comments in.
Okay. Great. I take that as a positive.
Okay. Thank you. Then the next order of business will be the data warehouse, and Mike Galwood will be presenting that.
Hey, just a little background on a data warehouse. It's about 7-8 years ago, we began developing our own internal data warehouse to start to house some of the data that we began collecting, things like ISAT or math scores. Over that period of time, we've collected quite a bit of data in our existing data warehouse. It's also required quite a bit of development work and time and resources on the district's technology department as well. And so when we started looking at a new student database system, we were looking at a database system that also had a module that would snap in for data warehousing as well, and Skyward does. Now that we've had that system in place for a year, we feel comfortable in bringing forward this recommendation to incorporate Skyward's data warehouse into our system as well. So this would eliminate any more development work on our part for the existing data warehouse. It would incorporate all of our data into a single unified platform, allowing for easier transfer of data and a single point to collect all of this data. It would also give us a single point to be able to draw reports. This is a completely web-based program. So we could draw reports, develop reports that could be accessed by our staff and administrators from anywhere as they need it. So as we move forward, looking at streamlining some of our processing duties on the back end, we were looking to incorporate a data warehouse into the student information system as we move forward. So this recommendation is to purchase Skyward's data warehouse module that will incorporate directly in with our student database system. The initial cost was, I believe, $23,000. Mm-hmm. And that would include the software, the licensing, Skyward's project management, implementation, and our first year of annual maintenance. Moving forward, annual maintenance for this particular module would be $4,429. So our recommendation is to move forward and purchase this module and incorporate that in at the back end of the school year. So it would be available for teachers and administrators by the end of the school year and into next fall. Any questions about that?
What was the system? Was it with the lunchroom program we had to buy something? Was it that Skyward as well?
Yeah, it's a different module.
We had to get on the same as them. Now, why would we want to have a server and data warehouse? Why wouldn't we want to use a cloud service?
Well, that'll be the next recommendation I bring in. I mean, they recommend having a server that houses just the data warehouse, even though we have a server that already houses Skyward for our student information system. But recommendation that I want to bring forward, probably by the Finance Committee, is to create a virtual environment for our server farm, because currently we have about 30 servers in production. And this would narrow that down to a single hardware platform that we can layer multiple servers on top of. So So I would much rather incorporate this data warehouse into that virtual environment. But I just wanted to make you aware of the cost, that if we did go with a server for this program, that's about what the cost would be. And with the 30 servers that we have in place right now, quite a few of them are coming up for refresh. So rather than get involved in purchasing more hardware, more server hardware, my recommendation is going to be moving forward with a virtual environment for our servers.
So that would you still need the server you say you need to have to house?
The only thing we would need then would be licensing for the operating system. So you wouldn't be looking at those heavy hardware costs moving forward.
I think, Steve, this might be more your area, but it seems like if you're out in the cloud, can't you have these sort of data warehouse features in the cloud instead of having to purchase it and then layer it?
You could. And essentially, Skyward is sort of a cloud type of software. It's all web-based. It's all browser-based, which, you know, from the end user's perspective, is cloud. We just happen to host it within our network here, rather than hosting it on some external service. And the same would be true for the data warehouse. I would not want to have our student information system sitting on our local network and then our data warehouse sitting on some cloud environment. So we kind of incorporate those both into the same environment here.
Mike, how long will this equipment last?
Oh, for the you're not talking the virtual equipment or for the...
What you're looking to purchase?
The software will last forever. I mean, that's just as place. If you're looking at how long will the hardware last, for the virtual server environment, that's hardware we can just keep snapping on top of it. But it would be about a 10-year lifespan for the controller units. Hard drives maybe a little less, but that would be basically where you would snap either new hard drives in or you add on to that array.
And you're happy with the Skyward system that you currently have?
Yeah, I've been very happy with
it. So you think it's a nice adjunct to what you're doing?
Mm-hmm. Right. I wouldn't bring a recommendation forward to continue to add on to it. So we've been very happy with it. And considering we've only had it in production now for, what, a year, right?
January 4th, yes.
And it feels like we've had it all along.
So just to help me out, is the one-time investment like purchasing the software and the services is installation?
Right, installation, configuration, the full setup for us. And then we'd be looking at $44.29 as an annual licensing fee for it. We would just incorporate that in with the other licensing and maintenance costs that we have at Skyward.
Just free up resources that we're maintaining this? And doing queries.
Mm-hmm. Right. We'll continue to maintain the data.
Yeah, there wasn't really a return on investment here besides the cost that we're going to be doing something else. Obviously, there's probably new features we can do faster.
Right. I think the return on investment is really the efficiency of processing the data, having it all in one location.
The end user can go right to the data, doesn't need a
intermediary. Correct. Rather than having to currently go to Gail Minkus, our database administrator, and say, well, look, I'd like to collect this data. And then she would have to do a custom query or a custom report. This would have all of that information at our teachers' fingertips.
We would create templates for the teachers.
Right.
And they would have it on their dashboard. So it truly would be a point and click for the teachers. The back end, like Gail Minkus's, would be to developing those templates.
Right.
But it's a one-stop, you know, it's distributed. So it eliminates that.
Okay.
That'd be good, yeah, because I've used some MRP systems that they put on the web, and mm-hmm. they look just as bad as they did on the
mm-hmm.
right.
system.
Right. Right. It integrates in with the current system, right. So it would look very much the same.
Or better.
Well, the same as the interface they look at today.
Right.
Okay.
So
yeah.
There wouldn't be as much of a learning curve for our teachers.
Right.
Any other questions then for Mike? Thank you, Mike.
Thank you.
Next order of business done this evening will be the 2013 Hadley Summer Painting Project. As you know, in the summer of 2011, we rolled out our concept of what the elementary schools were going to look like from a painting perspective. Each one was individually developed by the architects and approved by the buildings. And as you know, we did Lincoln during 2011. Then last summer, 2012, we ramped that up to include this building here, Churchill, Forest Glen, and Franklin. And then finally, we're looking to update and paint Hadley next summer, summer of 2013. As you know, this is in conjunction with our vision of the 21st Century Classroom. And we're looking to move this forward out of the Finance Committee. The estimated cost, I originally had presented a cost estimate of approximately $185,000, but it looks like this is going to be around $225,000, just a real rough estimate. Hadley is approximately 180,000 square foot building, and we've also expanded the scope to include the lunchroom, the pod area, basically the entire building. So we would look for your support. Additionally, under additional cost and information, I wanted to just keep you aware that so far we have the Hadley LMC project out for bid. That is actually due tomorrow. We have a meeting at 2 o'clock tomorrow afternoon for the bid opening. So at the next finance meeting, you'll be seeing that that project. We also have implementation of the STEM labs at the elementary level. Continued implementation of the 21st Century Classroom. We'll start to bring that forward and be going out to bid for that. And then also we're going to need to be updating our fire alarm and intercom systems. And then also later this evening, you're going to see, in a few minutes, you're going to see a recommendation for upgrades to our security infrastructure. I'll talk about that in a minute. So estimated cost, $225,000, and we would look for your support as we move this recommendation forward in anticipation of going out to bid in about a month. Any questions?
Does the increase, it sounds like it's adding on scope versus, I guess, the increased cost. Does it have any impact on the other summer camp?
No, this actually still falls within our budget range, and we've budgeted approximately $2.5 million for capital projects, capital-related work for next summer. That's our anticipated budget for the 14 fiscal year. Any other questions? Hearing none. We will move on to the final order of business done this evening, and that will be the security equipment upgrades. As I'm sure you're well aware, it's been national, probably international news over the past couple of years, the types of violence that has occurred in a number of school districts nationally, almost internationally. And as a result of the incident that took place probably 4 or 6 weeks ago at Sandy Hook out in Connecticut, we've taken a very quick and revised look at what our security infrastructure looks like. We have had comments from staff, from the community, from parent groups regarding what actually occurs regarding security within our buildings. And so we're looking to bring forward a recommendation to the board, to the Finance Committee this evening, and I'll explain that a little bit deeper, but I just wanted to give you sort of our plan. We're looking to get this implemented out of this current fiscal year, although it's an unbudgeted unbudgeted expenditure. We're looking forward to this to be implemented this year. We would look for the Finance Committee after this evening's presentation and would like to take this to the board for discussion and action at the next meeting on the 28th. We anticipate being able to get this system installed probably 6 to 8 weeks after we get final approval from the board on the 28th, and would like to get this done hopefully by spring break. So what does that look like? We are looking to install cameras on the front and back doors of all of our buildings, specifically for the elementary buildings. We would have cameras, monitors, recorders for the front and back doors at Hadley. Mike, did we also put one on the side door at Hadley also, as I seem to recall.
Right.
So Hadley has three cameras. The elementary schools will initially have two exterior cameras, front and back door. There'll be monitors in the office that the staff will have on whenever school is in session. And then there will be a recording system in place that will allow us, should an incident occur, that will allow us the ability to go back and look for 30 days of recorded data. So the next system that we looked at is a what they call the A-Phone. That's A-I-P-H-O-N-E. That's a system by ADT. And what it is there is a metal box that will sit outside the front door. It'll be a buzzer intercom system. The office staff will, someone will come up to the front door. They'll buzz. There will be a sort of a telephone type of device sitting at the desk of the individual responsible for answering that. They'll get a clear picture of the individual at the front door, as well as a conversation, and then whether the school staff allows that person to enter will then be determined. But it will give them a visual as well as a conversation that can take place. Right now we have buildings that more or less are open and are allowed to access. So this would go on the front doors, the exterior doors. The people would be buzzed in, and then they would be they would go right to the office for sign-in and so forth. Finally, we would like to we've looked at a couple of different systems regarding the emergency duress system. Ultimately, we'd like to move to something that's wireless, but just to keep the cost a little more under control currently, we're looking to just upgrade or ensure that our currently hardwired systems are in place. I don't have an actual price for that yet. They're expecting the cost to be $1,000 to $2,000 per building. Right now, the recommendation that you have in front of you is for an estimated cost of $54,500. We've just got those numbers back in this morning. I originally presented in the report that it would be $50,000 district-wide. It will actually come in at around just under $55,000 for all five buildings and then also CSO. We wanted to introduce the same type of security measures at CSO as we have in the elementary buildings. So we're talking approximately $55,000 for all six buildings. And one thing I also wanted to mention is that we've heard from parents as well as our the Y and the Park District that administers our before and after school program. They've asked for glass windows, if you will, at the rear entrances to our buildings, just so that they can get a visual on the parent or whomever is there to pick up a child. So that's something else that we'll be doing outside the scope of this current recommendation. So, do I have any questions?
What do we have cameras at Hadley now?
We have cameras at Hadley. We have cameras at all the buildings on the portables. We have some cameras at Hadley. And Mike, could you be a little more specific on that?
Well, the cameras at Hadley. First of all, we have coverage in all the grade schools, just on the portables. So we do have cameras at all the buildings, but in the grade schools, it's just pointed on the portables. At Hadley, we have cameras that are ported on the portables as well. But inside the building, we have cameras that are within the common areas, usually like restroom entrances or hallways, egresses in and out of the building. So we do have cameras on the inside of Hadley, but just in the hallway areas.
Bob, if you were going to go to a wireless solution, what would that cost be?
Wireless between what and what?
Well, I just give you a brief understanding of what the wireless system is. It's a wireless system. In other words, nothing is hardwired from the office to our emergency first responders. But additionally, there are wireless devices that certain staff members can carry throughout the building and out in our grounds, and that would give them the emergency call feature into the office or emergency first responders should an incident occur, let's just say out in the playground or out in the athletic fields at Hadley. That's what I refer to as a wireless system.
Well, and Bob, is for the wireless to work within that radius, because the way there's the push button, and then there's a panel that would be back in one of our tech closets. That's what the wireless is communicating back to you, is that panel. That panel is then tied into a burglar alarm system, which then dials out to the first responders. If we wanted to have coverage that would also include outside the buildings, like playground areas or from the fields, they'd also have to put repeaters within the building. It's yet to be determined how many repeaters that would be, and it would vary by building. But in order to get that kind of coverage, we'd also have to have the repeaters working in tandem with the the wireless response system.
That's what about correct. The Motorola private two-way radios that we installed on all the antennas? I mean, do they have some kind of security solution built into that existing RF infrastructure?
Well, I tell you...
The police also probably have the same, you know, can get a module and use it also, or at least tap into it and hear what's going on.
Sure. The wireless system that we've looked at is about $41,000, pretty substantial cost. That's why I backed off that recommendation at this time. I'm sorry, what else?
Well, we got all the Motorola two-way radios.
Right.
And we installed antennas at all the schools
We installed repeaters at each one of the buildings.
I didn't know if they had some kind of a security solution beyond that that's similar to what you want to install a new RF network for.
Sure.
That uses the existing infrastructure.
Steve, you know what? We have not asked that question of Motorola.
Okay.
I can go back and ask them that question about the wireless recommendation. I tell you, absolutely.
It's just RF. And
that's not before us this evening, so we would look into that eventually. I tell you, it amazes me just how much that Moto-Turbo system is currently in use, because every day we're getting, if a system goes down or one of the radios goes down, boy, that building staff gets to us pretty quickly, because they've become rather reliant upon it. We seem to find more and more uses for it all the time. So it's been a great system, and it certainly has proven its value. So if we were to bring you back a recommendation for a wireless system.
Well, I'm just curious, you know, if they've got something.
I would investigate that.
Does the same type of thing you're looking at,
yeah, as
other overlay system.
And one of the reasons that wireless system gets so expensive, as Mike indicated earlier, is because of the repeaters that would need to be built in to that system within the building.
And then you'll have to tie it back into your battery backups and all that, which I think you've already done with the motor turbo systems.
Yeah.
Do we know what kind of system the school in Connecticut has?
No, I do not know. I know that this system... Now, just to back up a second, you know... Mike and I had a meeting a couple of years ago. We were really starting to ramp up after the security audit, I believe, back in 07 or 08, regarding increasing our backbone for security. And what we found is that when it was originally installed, it was sort of a hodgepodge of vendors, contractors, and different types of systems. And we found that when we're going back asking these vendors or contractors, hey, we would like you to come out and take a look at this, that we're having an issue with it. Well, those guys were out of business. They were no longer supporting that equipment. So we made a decision to go to a sort of a national type of contractor, which is ADT Tyco. And that's why we moved to these guys a number of years ago, just because they've been around a long time, they're a nationally known company, and they continue to support the solutions that they offer. So that's why we moved to them a couple of years ago.
Well, the reason I ask is I just want to understand and make sure that we're getting a solution that we feel is upgrading our security and not just a knee-jerk reaction.
I don't believe
it. I just had heard that they had a security system, a camera, and so that's why I want to make sure, is this the most robust thing that we feel we can do?
You know, Dan, as I recall from the news reports, that kid came in and just sort of blew out some windows, and that's how we gained access. So no matter what we do, when you have someone that's so intent on creating that type of violence, I don't know that any system is going to really prevent that from happening. But this is sort of this is a system that we believe is in the best interest of our kids, of our staff, of our community. We feel as though this is the best system available at this time, certainly by one of the premier vendors out there.
Ann.
I heard a voice. I'm sorry. Yes, ma'am. Yes, Ann.
Oh, I'm sorry. Isn't what we're proposing currently, was it not also part of our 2007 audit recommendation?
These were absolutely recommendations as a result of the audit that took place back in 07-08.
Which you may have already said and I missed it, but...
I think...
While, to go back to Dan's question, it is not a panacea by any means, but we would still put it in the category, I think, of fundamental security systems, to create greater visibility and understanding of who's entering our buildings before they're standing right in front of us.
absolutely. Those were part of the original recommendations made by Ken Trump a number of years ago. So this is just, you know, annually, semi-annually, Mike and I review that security audit, and this is one of the recommendations that were identified there. And so I'm going to be honest with you. As a result of what's been occurring nationally, almost internationally, we feel as though we need to implement this type of system given the circumstances and the conditions that exist in our world today.
I just wanted to make sure that it was enough. I know my brother-in-law's school district, they're putting in bulletproof windows at the entrances, for example. Yeah.
You know, I believe they have them up in one of the Skokie districts, too. I was sent a link. Because Skokie 68 or one of those districts up there has spent considerable money. I believe they only have two or three buildings, but they have spent considerable money in the past year or two in upgrading their security options or security equipment there. And one of the things that they have that would be nice is when those folks get buzzed in from the outside, there's sort of a two-step process. You have the outer doors and then inner doors. Before, as they come in, they're buzzed in that first door, and then they have to speak to someone in an office. Where we're not really set up for that. Like if you look at really at any building except for maybe Hadley, we don't have an office set up right adjacent to an entry point. But I'll be honest with you, it'd be great to have that type of system where someone can come in and you're going to see them face to face. And yes, probably something along the lines of bulletproof glass would be a recommendation there. But that would take some reconfiguration of our existing entrances. Any other questions? So, as I stated earlier, we're looking for the Finance Committee's support this evening, and we would like to bring this to the board on the 28th for discussion and action, which is very uncommon in terms of how we make recommendations to the board. But we feel as though this is of a significant nature enough that we need to move this along and move it along quickly. So does anyone have any comments? Can I answer any other questions? Can I get a feeling for the committee voicing support for this recommendation? And would it be okay if we move it for discussion and action on the 28th?
I'm 100% in favor of this.
I'd like to see, you know, in terms of IP cameras, what the trade-offs are.
Steve, I'm going to give you, I will talk to, Mike and I will talk to ADP this week, and before you get a recommendation for the board meeting, we'll have that information included in your report. I'll try to get a cost breakdown, the good versus bad points, and then what would be the price,
right,
if you will.
Yeah, and like you're saying, if someone's intent on getting in, there may be no amount of security you could do, but at least if other people can see what's going on very quickly, I think that's part of the issue. I don't know if police, some town school districts have police, have a video feed, or is just something you want in the admin office, or how that works.
Well, this recommendation this evening is for the administrative office for each building.
Is this an application on their flat panels that then comes up on their PC, or do you have to buy a separate CRT that you just have?
This price includes a monitor.
Yeah, and it is integrated in with our network, so we can view those cameras from anywhere within the network. We can also make them available on something.
Okay. I mean, I guess that's, and I don't know if the IP cameras, if you can do that with these, I just didn't know, you know, what the plan was there in case there is an issue.
Mike, do you have a pretty good idea in terms of what Steve's looking for so we can talk to ADT? Okay. All right, Steve, we'll get you that information and we will incorporate it in the next board report. Dan?
Yeah, I echo what Steve said. I think it'd be good to find that out. Also, the Motorola thing, I don't know if there's any opportunities there.
I don't know,
but
we'll get it for you. Okay. Any other questions on that particular topic? All right, it's about 7:15. We have a little time before the board meeting is going to start. Any other questions regarding anything finance, facility, or operationally related that I might be able to answer for you or that you would care for us to take a look at?
You said next meeting we'll go over the CAP 2012 summer camp.
Yeah, I'll have that on the agenda. It'll be real brief. Everything came in on time and a little bit under budget. Not as great. We had one issue with the Hadley parking lot, and we sent out an email regarding that because some drawings weren't exactly accurate between what we had, the village had, the contractor had. So we sprung a leak one day. The contractor hit a water pipe. So there was a little additional work involved in that. But other than that, everything came in. We didn't have any bad soils that we ran into, and there was an allowance for that. There were several allowances, so everything came in under budget. The painting project that we brought to you guys last year, that came in on budget. There were some extras that we took out of normal operating funds, but that was just because when we get into these buildings, you know, we called for two coats of paint on a wall, and because of the age of the building or whatever, we may have had to put three coats. But everything came in very, very close or under budget. And as you all know, on time. So, hearing nothing, then I guess we'll break for a short time, and we'll bring the group together back at 7:30. Thank you.
Thanks, Bob.
Thank you, Bob.